This is an IEEE Computer Society podcast. I'm David Alan Greer, and you are listening to The Known World for August 2010. When I start to work on these podcasts, I usually have an idea, something that I would like to explore, something that I think illumines the state of technology and society today. However, more often than not, something happens, a little event occurs, that spins the podcast in an entirely different direction. This time, I wanted to explore the idea of black boxing, of taking technology and cramming it into a dark, opaque box where no one can see or think about what goes on inside. It was going to take me through some of the writings of Wilhelm Kauer, someone you'll hear about later, but the podcast didn't go that way. It didn't want to. It stuck out its paws and held fast. And then one day, someone in a casual remark said, "Do you know, I don't think mathematics is really all that important anymore, and I think we could just get rid of it." And so a new podcast began. The title of it is Mental Discipline. You could consider it a barrier to entry. Even in my neighborhood, which occasionally leans towards, well, a dictatorship of the proletariat, the political philosophy of the running dog cafe can discourage patrons. The Running Dog was organized as a Marxist collective, and it promotes its ideology on the front door. If you find any word, item, or action to be racist, sexist, ageist, culturalist, or in any other way designed to divide and degrade the laboring classes, reads the sign over the cash register, please notify a member of the wait staff who will raise the issue at the next meeting of the Central Committee. This stern warning actually camouflages a lovely restaurant. The food was good, the atmosphere congenial, and the staff quite pleasant. It was a great place to hold a lunch meeting, provided you were willing to let other customers eavesdrop on your conversation. Apparently, many of the regulars subscribed to the philosophy, more associated with USA Today than with the Daily Worker, that your business is our business. It was often difficult to keep prying eyes and open ears away from your conversations. At one of the last dinners that I ever had at the Running Dog, I was subject to a running commentary from a young man sitting at the table next to ours who was trying desperately to join our party. He laughed at our jokes, agreed with our comments, and attempted to add his own opinions to our discussion. Just as the dinner came to an end, he moved a chair to our table and sat next to a woman in our party named Carrie, who really seemed to be the object of his attentions. He chose a bad moment to make his move. At that instant, the comrade waiter delivered our bills, handing one to each member of the table. When we looked at the pieces of paper in our hands, we realized that every single one of us had received the wrong bill. Seeing his opportunity, the unfortunate young man asked, "Hey, what's the probability of that happening?" We all paused, and then immediately began searching for pens and pieces of scratch paper. With just a few minutes of work, we determined that there were three obvious ways of calculating the probability. You could, first, enumerate the sample space, or, two, employ, I thought, a relatively clever combinatorial argument, or, three, do this interesting backward conditional analysis. Carrie led the discussion of the problem, as I recall. As she finished, she looked at the chair next to her and saw that it was empty and realized that the troublesome young man had disappeared. He had apparently retreated during our computations. "Such is the power of mathematics," she said. "An aid to the inquisitive, a comfort to man, and a protection to women. Mathematics may or may not be the most universal way of protecting individuals from unwanted attention, but it's long served as a barrier to distinguish one group from another. First-year engineering students bond over their struggles with calculus, and economists wear their statistical knowledge as a badge of honor. The practice is at least as old as Napoleon, who required all of his artillery officers to learn mathematics, even those who might not be expected to use it on the battlefield. This particular shared body of knowledge, explained the historian Ken Alder, distinguished the artillerists as a body from the general officers. Still, in the past couple of months, I've been part of three conversations in which the participants honestly discussed removing mathematics from the engineering and computer science curriculum. A dinner with friends was the first. A discussion with an engineering dean was the second. An email from colleagues was the third. Their arguments to remove mathematics were all based on the claim that most mathematical analysis is now done and handled by computer programs. We would never do mathematics by hand, the argument usually begins. We would always use a mathematical analysis package, a structural modeling program, or some kind of statistical software. We would never trust any calculation done by a person. Well, as you can imagine, such suggestions are met by an explosion of emotion that can't admit to such a change. This emotion is usually followed by three objections, most forcefully made, for the retention of mathematics. First is the claim that engineers need to be able to double-check calculations. The second objection states that it's useful to be able to estimate the order of magnitude for any calculation. And the final, and perhaps most persistent, is the idea that mathematics provides a mental discipline for young engineers and computer scientists. Mathematics will likely be retained in the curriculum, I suspect, but not for any of these three reasons. The first two are completely specious. The last is an admission of defeat. If you don't accept hand calculation as part of the original analysis, you aren't going to accept it as a validation of machine-computed results. In many cases, it's difficult to compute even a meaningful estimate of the final answer, as such things often involve nonlinear differential equations or large matrices. That third defense of mathematical education, that claim that it disciplines the mind, is the last defense of a dying field. The proponents of Greek, of Latin, of music theory, of mechanical drafting or public rhetoric, and a host of other topics that were once required subjects of study have all tried to retain their privileged place in the curriculum by arguing that Ovid or Virgil or the Sonata form were a good discipline for students. Not one of them succeeded. In American education, the idea of mental discipline contains an inherent weakness as a conception, reports educational historian Lawrence Vese. He points out that it emphasizes the esoteric over the practical, subjects that are distant from daily experience over those that help students master physical and social experience. When teachers claim that their subject merely disciplines the mind, they're admitting that their ideas are no longer relevant for most students. Still, our relationship to mathematics has clearly been shifting over the past two decades because of forces that computer scientists have unleashed through a process that is known as black boxing. Black boxing is an activity that hides expertise. It takes a body of knowledge, incorporates those ideas into a machine, and then hides the inner operation of that machine behind an opaque facade. To use knowledge, we operate the black box through a simplified set of controls. programming languages are classic examples of black boxes. They incorporate knowledge about computer architecture, memory, registers, machine codes, and all the other aspects of actual physical devices. They allow individuals who know nothing about the inner workings of a computer to utilize knowledge about computer logic and produce useful output. Application packages, such as spreadsheets, word processors, and games and databases, are other examples of black boxes. They, too, encapsulate knowledge about programming. Indeed, many, if not most, engineered products can be considered as black boxes: thermostats, automobiles, MP3 players, inertial guidance systems. All of them can be viewed as systems that hide knowledge. Black boxes litter the societies of high modernity, notes the sociologist Donald McKenzie. Increasing black boxing may indeed be a passable definition of modernization. While it's possible to trace the idea of black boxes to the origin of the machine or the invention of interchangeable parts, we usually identify the concept with the electrical engineer William Cowper, 1900 to 1945, who developed black box techniques to simplify the work of designing electronic circuits. Cowper's biographers note that during the 1920s, engineering problems were typically solved in an empirical fashion by analyzing specific circuits instead of looking at classes or families of circuits. Cowper recognized that certain electronic functions could be isolated in a simple device that had only one or two or four connections to the rest of the circuit. Though he never used the term, the isolated device would be known thereafter as a black box. In Cowper's day, black boxes would most commonly be filters, circuits that would block electronic signals in a certain frequency range. To build these filters, to create these black boxes, Cowper had to invent a unified theory of filter design. Engineers could use this theory to design filters without worrying about the details of construction. They could specify the filter and then grind through a series of equations to produce the design. All known wave filters of a certain class are contained in the filters of this new theory, he explained. This new theory has been carried through practically to find out the most economic filter for any practical purpose. The black boxing of filters is often treated as a technical achievement, but it's really a step in the division of labor, of engineering labor. When a good circuit designer lays out a new circuit, explained a Bell Laboratories engineer, he isolates those functions that are more or less self-contained so that it's easy to partition the problem so that several people can work on the different parts. This partition allows for a division of labor. It lets a senior engineer assign simple tasks to less experienced designers. It also allows any designer to make use of expertise that a design team might not possess. If done well, the partition should allow the team to replace parts of the circuit with commercial modules. Not only is this cheaper because of the saving of design time, the engineer continues, but it may provide a better module than he could have produced. The function of this module may not be the designer's specialty, whereas the designer of the off-the-shelf module is likely to have been a specialist in that subject area. Cowper's black boxes split the engineering community into two groups, specialists and generalists. The fundamental benefit of such a division was identified well before Cowper, actually by Charles Babbage, in 1832. By dividing the work to be executed into different processes, he wrote, each requiring different degrees of skill or of force, an employer can purchase exactly that precise quantity of both which is necessary for each to possess. With the division of labor, employers no longer needed to pay for expensive skills when such skills were not needed. Those skills might be the understanding of circuit design, or the ability to use a difficult computer language, or it might even be the mastery of mathematics. We've long observed how black boxing has reduced the demand for expensive mathematical skills in the commercial world. Just three generations ago, sales clerks needed to know enough mathematics to be able to sum a list of prices, to calculate taxes, to make change. Step by step, cash registers and point-of-sales terminals black boxed that skill. Now, most sales clerks need only know how to operate the black box, how to aim a laser at a universal product code, how to record a credit card. A few senior clerks will indeed have some training on the black boxes of those sales terminals, and they'll know how to control their operation. But the number of these senior clerks will be few indeed. As in the world of commerce, so black boxing divides labor in the world of engineering and computer science. Tools like Mathematica and Maple and AutoCAD split the population of technical laborers into a large group that can take its mathematical skills from software and a much smaller cohort that can contribute their knowledge to those black box programs. If we're to adjust the skills that we require of engineers and computer scientists, it will have to be done in relation to those tools, rather than to follow the argument that the rising generation needs to have its mind disciplined, or that it needs the same kind of contact with mathematical symbols that we have had, or that our parents had, or, in my case, my grandmother had. Of course, if we don't want to face the suggestion that our software has removed a fundamental set of skills from a portfolio of engineers, we can always retreat to the reasoning used by Napoleon, and I suppose by Carey. Mathematics sets us apart. It's a barrier against the unwashed. Mathematics makes us special. Not that long ago, I attended an event where I found myself in the company of a former high-level government official. This gentleman was very proud of his own accomplishment and was quite willing to divide the social distance between the two of us by reciting his own resume. He had been an ambassador to a vital ally, a deputy ambassador to a dangerous enemy, undersecretary for important stuff, special assistant for powerful people. He was with Reagan in Helsinki, Nixon in China, and Kennedy during the Cuban Missile Crisis, though he didn't really look all that old. In 40 seconds and 5 sentences, he let me know that he was important and that I was not. "What have you done?" he asked with a grin that was friendly in the sense that it suggested that I had already lost this fight. "Not much," I admitted. "I'm a computer scientist. I have a PhD in mathematical statistics." He didn't quite slink away like that young man who had tried to win Carey's attention, but he quickly found an excuse to leave my presence. He departed, muttering something about never being very good at math. Mathematics may have lost its ability to help us with common problems. It may have lost some, or even all, of its value to engineers. And it may not be able to discipline our mind. But it makes us special, and occasionally can be used to discipline the minds of others. You've been listening to The Known World. This is a series of podcasts that are based on essays that appear in Computer Magazine, which is a publication of the Computer Society. This podcast is based on the essay that appeared in the August 2010 issue of Computer. If you want to find more about Computer or the Computer Society, you can go to www.computer.org. More about this podcast can be found at www.computer.org/theknownworld. The last part is all one word. Other Computer Society podcasts can be found at www.computer.org/podcasts. If you have any comments, I'd love to hear them. You can send them to podcasts@computer.org. I need to tell you that the music for this podcast came from the Music Alley PodSafe Network. You can find it at musicalley.com. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.